Hello everyone and welcome back to the Computer Vision in Production podcast show. The podcast show where we talk all about everything computer vision, from the individual components of the technology including vision, cameras and deep learning, right through to hearing about some of the most interesting applications that companies are using at the moment. Hello everyone and welcome to the Computer Vision in Production podcast. I'm your host Anthony Kelly. Today's guest is Naja Van Schmood. Naja is the co-founder at Peregrine.ai. Naja, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Yeah, thanks, Anthony, for the invite. I'm really glad to speak of some exciting topics today.
Yeah, no, me too, particularly because when we done my previous podcast show and we spoke about it, it was more around a general AI feel and all of those topics, whereas now we can really kind of deep dive into what you are doing at Peregrine Technologies, the types of computer vision that you are working on there and how you are, you know, mixing some more traditional methods with some more deep learning methods today to build your product. I mean, look, before we go in and start talking about Peregrine, before we go in and start talking about computer vision, why don't you give us a bit of an overview into yourself, your background, first time you sat in front of a computer and seen a bit of code, how did it feel?
I'm glad to do that. I'm happy to do some introduction. So yeah, I'm, as said, Naja, currently co-founder and also acting as the CTO of Peregrine AI. As you mentioned, maybe before we dig deeper on later on what we do in the company, maybe short introduction, what we actually do. As said, we are kind of computer vision based company, and we are based in Berlin. We're a startup, so now almost 3 years old. So beginning of next year, we will actually turn 3. And what we do is that we're active in the mobility space. We put cameras behind windshields of commercial vehicles mostly and help them with what we call video telematics solution of logistic companies and other fleet operators to operate safer and more sustainable. Maybe that a quick intro from the company side, and maybe now how did I end up myself in programming or especially in the computer vision space. So actually, and then let me go back to during my studies. So I started here in Berlin at the Freie Universität Berlin. Yeah, I had the chance to join the robotics labs and especially the humanoid team where we built up soccer playing robots. That was back in basically 2009. Maybe going back on memory lane, where we had kind of the first generation of smartphone arms. So all the compute capabilities are very limited. And I actually started off doing computer vision or writing the computer vision module for these robots. It was back then very basic, right? We had limited resources. All the computation was done on the robots itself. Kind of the capabilities were similar to kind of the smartphones back then. And it was, of course, also before all the deep learning kind of wave hit. So it was mostly kind of rule-based stuff and color-based things to see what objects are actually in front of the robot, et cetera, et cetera. And actually, what I'm proud of, we actually could use this computer vision module in the competitions, in the World Cup competitions 2010. We made actually second place. Won, but it was not the reason of the computer vision module that worked very well. But yeah, so actually this work got me hooked on computer vision.
I don't blame you. You make it sound really fun as well.
it was very fun. I learned a lot. It was a great experience. I can recommend everyone to do something like that if there's the possibility. And then actually I moved from really this object detection, computer vision stuff more to the localization bits. And yeah, of course, and also computer vision based. And actually after my studies, joined then Bosch for a PhD program in collaboration with Heidelberg University, working in the R&D department. And as I said, on kind of localization and mapping technologies for kind of robotics, but also autonomous driving applications. Also got the chance to join the, for a couple of months, the autonomous driving team in the US in Palo Alto, which was pretty impressive. Learned from these guys. And yeah, actually that from this time on, I was totally in the computer vision field. Yeah, and in my last stop before then actually joining, founding Peregrine, I was at TomTom leading their localization ambitions in the autonomous driving research unit. But that was not necessarily only focused on computer vision, but also on the whole kind of sensor kit the autonomous car had to offer. Yes, and from all these, I would say experiences is what we can benefit now at actually also a lot what we do in Peregrine. As you know, we do a lot of computer vision. We use, maybe we come to that later, a lot of also embedded devices with limited computational hardware. So we have a lot of links to what I did in the past. We have also other sensors, not LiDAR or something, but inertial measurement units, etc. What I also worked on beforehand. So that's how everything comes together, basically.
I suppose when it comes to Peregrine, you've given us a bit of an overview of what's gotten you into it, or what's got you there to founding it. So, you first got your passion for computer vision with your robotics, the Robot World Cup, which I've heard quite a lot about as well. It sounds really fun. And then you went to do some sort of traditional computer vision roles within Bosch and TomTom, and then you've come to Peregrine, right?
Yes, exactly.
So what helped you with those two companies with founding Peregrine? And then, what do you guys do differently than, Bosch or Volkswagen, I guess? Because, these guys have buckets, wheelbarrows of cash that they could just do this as well. But you guys have obviously done it in a different way to make yourself stand out from the bunch.
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to give some details there. Maybe first of all, from which did I kind of profit from my former jobs for kind of for Peregrine? Of course, firstly, I would say a lot of insights into how to do computer vision, how to solve robotics problems in general, right, on the perception side, and also so the technical bits, but then also a lot of domain expertise, I would say, because we are still in the mobility space, right, with Peregrine. Also because formerly me and my co-founders worked in the mobility space and on the OEMs or like in tier one, tier two suppliers, building actually autonomous vehicles. And actually many of the problems we have now from the perception side are very similar to what you also would see when you build driver assistance systems or autonomous vehicles. You need to detect what objects are there in the traffic scene. Are there pedestrians? Are there bicycles? Are there cars? And where are they? What is the intention, et cetera, et cetera? And so how does the overall scene look? Are there maybe traffic lights, traffic signs, et cetera, et cetera? So plenty of these things. I would say the main difference from our side is that we are at observing system, so we don't kind of steer or the vehicle, and also our intention is not to steer at the moment, right? We want to provide data and insights based on this perception to help, as I said in the beginning, for example, the fleet operator to improve its own operations, like to reduce costs, to reduce risks, to make the general fleet safer, etc. And so our focus is different, right? It's not for us. It's not a problem if we don't have the best detection algorithm ever, right? Because we can still provide a lot of kind of meaningful information and very valuable data to our customer. Whereas if you're at a Bosch or, I don't know, a Volkswagen, where you want really to steer the car, you need to nail it absolutely. And also the purpose is different. So that is, I would say, the main differentiator. And also, of course, from the that's maybe software side, from hardware side, we are kind of a plug-and-play solution, right? So we don't care if it's a 20-year-old car or if it's the newest car directly from the factory, right? So
yeah,
it works everywhere and also overall kind of makes and models.
And then, so again, keeping it onto Peregrine, what you guys are doing and what you guys are working on, what was it like coming or founding the company? Because initially, again, you can tell me if I'm wrong, I'm assuming it would have started as very much conceptual based, probably some really ugly prototypes running on Raspberry Pi devices that were, you know, quite clunky, to then working from that data that is quite not moving and, you know, solid, to then be like, perfect, look, we can productionize this, let's go from it. So if we kind of chunk that into two, the first one being doing the research, prototyping, and then going into the second phase of productionizing it. What was that journey like?
Yeah, sure. I can give some insights into that. So actually, we had a very long, how you said, prototyping phase, or even before, and I would say ideation phase. And even before we founded the company, I think at least half a year before, me and my co-founders, Steph and Jorrit, we sat together regularly to kind of work on the idea, to do first, as you said, prototypes, right? From the software side, is it actually feasible? Can we run deep neural networks on limited hardware? So first test, actually, it was not on Raspberry Pi, but we used Android systems and smartphones because kind of the development environment is super neat. And we have a lot of support, for example, from TensorFlow Lite, nowadays actually also PyTorch and similar libraries to give you off the ground. But it was, I mean, the first thing was, of course, the technical feasibility. Does it run? How much can we run from all this perception side there, doing some first prototypes there? But then, of course, also very important is more the business aspect, right? We ran, for example, before we started, some kind of user studies and I don't know, talked to drivers and fleets and did some user research and market research and all the typical stuff, I would say, you do to kind of, evaluate the business idea. And of course, the big pillar is also then building up the network, right? We all worked in corporates before, so we were quite new to the startup scene. Of course, we knew some founders, but then it's different to, I don't know, get into the networks, meet other founders, get some learnings from others, talk to first business angels or VCs, etc., just to get a feeling, right? If the idea is also interesting for the ecosystem. That was more of this research, ideation, prototyping phase. And then actually, since we founded the company, for us it was, I think after a couple of months, we were actually already with a prototype on the road. We had the luck to find companies who trusted in us and who did some research or allowed us to do some research with them and to equip their vehicles. So we gathered a lot of data already early on, and which helped us to learn a lot, right? To train our models, to test a lot on our algorithms and so on. Yeah, and that kind of took also a while. And actually, officially, we launched now our product in September this year, which we call Fleet Intelligence Solution. It's kind of bundle as from this camera device we put behind the windshield in the car, and then of course a web app, web platform, providing all the insights to our customer, and mostly that are then fleet managers and so on. That was more or less the journey where we are now, and now extending our customer base basically.
Nice. So then obviously one thing that I'm really interested in hearing about. So, I mean, look, it's difficult enough to have to research if the product will be successful, to, understanding your customer base, but then having the actual physical software and hardware running on an edge device and something that you can only control in so many respects, right? I suppose if we start off with one and say, one challenge is obviously hardware limitations. First, you've got to keep it small. It's got to fit in a car. Two, it's got to have enough power. Three, it's got to consistently be running at an optimal, have an optimal performance, or else the algorithms that are underlining it are actually not relevant at all. How did you come towards the hardware issue or challenge?
Yeah, they're a very good question, and that's also one, I would say, one thing that keeps us very busy, and it's very important for us. As you correctly said, right, the hardware is very limited at the edge, right? And our approach to solve that is actually that we try or to find a very good mixture between different kind of algorithms, which are like more, you would maybe say, more the on one side, deep learning based approaches, which are computationally sometimes more heavier because they have millions of parameters, and inference takes, of course, some resources. But of course, you can also run it on the GPU. So our hardware has also mobile GPUs, which is for that then very useful. On the other hand, we don't solve everything with neural networks, but we also use a lot of more classical traditional computer vision algorithms to kind of to find the or to combine, let's say, the best of the two worlds, right? Because the traditional stuff is often maybe not as precise often, right? Deep learning is almost outperforming the traditional stuff, but often it's in a way more performant. If you do sometimes do some classical stuff. And then of course we maybe going a little bit more deeper on the neural network side. So I guess many of the listeners will have heard from network architectures like MobileNet, et cetera. And we of course use similar approaches to from the beginning optimize our networks to run efficiently on limited kind of hardware. That is, of course, one's memory. Memory is very important for us because we can't hold a super huge network in the memory, but also from the operations, how you do, I don't know, the convolutions, et cetera, over the images. That's, of course, also very, very important. And also then to see another thing, where can you maybe reuse certain calculations, certain computations over different tasks. So we talked about, for example, multitask networks where you can rely on the same kind of backbone of your networks, which is actually often the biggest part of a neural network, and then have just smaller kind of heads different for focusing on different tasks, like, I don't know, detection or classification or whatnot of certain images, to kind of also save to redo the same calculations over and over and over again.
Nice. And then, I mean, look, I would say, and look, I'd like to maybe get your input on this as well. 10 years ago, running these models would be very difficult to see. The machines were big, the power was low. At some point, we have to pay thanks to smartphone development, and I pay thanks to smartphone development for, unfortunately, for my troubles to Facebook. If people didn't follow Facebook so much, phones wouldn't need to be better. If people didn't post on social media, cameras wouldn't need to be better. And then a lot of money and development went into this. And then, as kind of like, a big benefactor of this was the computer vision edge computing market. What do you think? Do you think it was inevitable, or do you think we've reached here sooner because of social media and smartphones being trendy?
It's a very interesting question. I think you have a very valid point there. So definitely the success of smartphones kind of rushed the development, right? Because especially of course on the embedded hardware side, right? From chips, from displays, from whatnot. I think without a smartphone, we wouldn't be there where we are now. On the computer vision bits, I also would say that the big players like Facebook, Google, whatnot, that of course, because they have a lot of data, right? Also, if you think of Google Street View, the amount of data they have from the scenery, what they can learn from that and infer from that. Every time you do some capture, it's called capture from Google, right? With the images, they get nicely annotated data and these things that, right, I think that then improved a lot also the progress, what you can make, and accelerated the development. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, would agree.
Nice, cool. Good to know. And then while we were talking about, the hardware limitations that you have, that you would face initially, how did you, or what did you look at to initially overcome CPU, GPU performance restrictions?
As I previously said, right, one idea is to have the split between, for example, deep learning models and also more classical traditional approaches to optimize for this kind of hardware, and especially for CPU and GPU. This stuff also runs on, the networks obviously run on the GPU. So when you can put stuff on the GPU, you still have resources on the CPU left to do then other computations and to parallelize different kind of computations. That's kind of the main strategy from the hardware point. Maybe also interesting, we don't go super deep on, or at least not at the moment, to do really go very deep on the hardware level on CPU or GPU. To use special instructions. We mostly at the moment rely kind of on the middle layers, like from TensorFlow or PyTorch, and or from the operating system to kind of hide or to abstract that away for us, because otherwise for every hardware we use we needed to redo all these optimizations over and over again, and at the moment we are still looking a lot into hardware, so that does not make sense yet to do this specific optimizations.
And have you guys looked into any new techniques in terms of like model optimization? I know a lot of companies are looking at techniques like model pruning, model distalization, model quantization. Is that something that you have touched on? I know it's quite a new field, lots to explore, but I feel there's still a lot to be discovered there too.
Yes, exactly. Of course, we try to use these methods as much as possible where it makes sense. I think you named a lot with the pruning or quantization. You can do a lot, of course. That's always this balance you need to take between then the model precision, right, and also the kind of computational efficiency. And depending on what you need, for us it's, as I mentioned previously, more on the computational efficiency side, right? We can make use of more use of these kind of technologies, but that's exactly what we do, in order to get the models slow. And one thing I also mentioned previously, right, for example, to reuse computations, and if we have multiple kind of learning tasks, to try to use the same model backbone for different tasks, which also speeds up a lot or saves computation a lot.
I don't know if this is a real life example I'm going to give you, but let's say if you have a model that theoretically works in research, it looks good, and then when you try to run it on an edge device, it just can't process the information. It's not giving it maybe not necessarily real time, but even close to milliseconds off real time. Like, what would you do in that sort of situation? Because I appreciate there's probably a lot of people in that domain now or in that situation now where, you know, they've got this great idea, but it's just not really fitting together at the end.
Yeah, that's a very valid point, right? And of course, we also face these situations. So I would say there are two points to your question. First of all, maybe this from the computational efficiency, right? If I have a network which might be just a little bit too big to be processed completely at the edge, depending what it is. And for example, we have also tasks which we deliberately don't process at the edge because, for example, if we don't need the real-time information right immediately, there's a lot we can also do in post-processing on certain data points. And then, for example, there are certain steps where we can do some post-processing, for example, in the cloud. Or, for example, let's say, maybe to make it a little bit more concrete, we have certain simple object detection running on the device, but on certain cases, we want to refine these results. We can then, on the limited video or imagery we get back from the devices, we could also run a much bigger model, for example, with higher accuracy of the model output to, for example, improve on the object detection, right? So to have something like a two-stage approach, that maybe is one idea in regards to computational efficiency. The other thing I wanted to mention, you also often see if you come from research and often you test stuff or develop stuff on limited data, right? And then you will, if you have it in the wild, really in the production environment, you also notice that sometimes your models perform bad in the sense that they are very uncertain because they just observe scenes they never seen beforehand, right? And in that case, it's then kind of exactly this could be an indicator to say, actually, I should maybe take this data bits and include them in my kind of retrainings or in my continuous training pipeline to improve also these kind of scenes I never, where something totally new happened, for example, right? So maybe as a second answer to that.
And then I suppose just a question, maybe not necessarily directed at Peregrine, but, you know, you kind of touched on it there with Google Maps having a lot of data that, you know, they can work with, that they can use, that other companies can then use to help them to build products. You know, what else would you look at in the logistics domain or in the real world data space that you can look at or you can use that information to help you build or to help you further better impact your customers with your current product?
It's a very good question. I would say you can if you have a lot of data, like sticking to this Google example, right? I mean, of course, they use this data now to build their maps, for example, but there are so many more applications where this data could be useful. And I mean, as there's a saying, right, data is a new oil. The idea is to find data points, ideally from visual data which have relevance to a lot of different business cases, right, or applications. And that could be also from the Google data. You can have stuff for logistic companies, but also for cities, for whatnot. It's kind of also a similar idea we have at Peregrine, right? We collect data now mostly for our fleet customers, but there are also so many data points which might be relevant for so many other use cases. So it's a win-win, right? Everyone kind of benefits, and in the end, our goal is to generally make mobility or cities safer and more sustainable. We believe you can do a lot using computer vision and imagery data.
Nice. Well, look, perfect way for me to lead into the next question. So using robotics, localization, mapping, and then mixing that up with computer vision. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to it, when do you know to leverage the data, leverage machine learning, or leverage the CPUs? What's the clinical things that help you make these decisions?
Yeah, maybe also try to answer that in different angles. First of all, I think how to leverage data what I said in the previous question is also very valid there, right? One data point could be useful or helpful or bring insight for many different use cases, right? Maybe example of a traffic sign, because everyone knows of that, right? There's mapping companies are interested in that to show you in their navigation systems, I don't know, the speed, right? Or yeah, on the other hand, also cities would like to know where actually their, for example, traffic lights stand, et cetera, et cetera. So that is kind of fast leveraging kind of the data to make it useful for multiple use cases. On the other hand, of course, leveraging the data, yeah, in order to improve our machine learning models, right? That is one of them, kind of the maybe second bit of your question. And for us, machine learning, as we discussed, we don't only rely on machine learning, but of course, machine learning is, I would say, a state-of-the-art approach to many different problems, especially object detection, classification stuff, etc. It's always where we would go for something like machine learning. There might, for example, you also mentioned localization, mapping. I think this is these more geometrical problems often does not make sense to use in learning-based approaches. You could also, but kind of the math behind it is very simple. So there's at least for these bits no need to learn it. And the last bit of your question in regards to CPUs, yes, I think also what we discussed beforehand, it's this mixture of this traditional approaches and learning. And a lot runs also fast on the CPUs when it's more traditional, for example.
Nice. Excellent. And then, look, I'll leave it then, Naja, with one question, because, look, you've given me a lot to take away from this. We're at the end of the year now, 2021. What technology or what development have you been most excited about in the last 6 months or to come out early next year that you think can have a big impact on the AI computer vision space?
That's actually a very interesting question. Full disclosure, I'm at the moment so tied up that I don't follow so deeply all the cool research stuff at the moment. But what I'm kind of exciting to see more, it's also not super new, but I guess it will come more and more also from the research parts to the more production bits. It's actually everything going around federated learning. So distributing also the learning tasks across kind of a swarm, let's call it like that, of edge devices. And of course, that's also something, I mean, yeah, maybe in the future for us, because we still have a lot of training ongoing, it's just centralized at the moment. But you can imagine if you could train certain things already on the devices or kind of, to have more fine granular networks per, I don't know, device, whatnot, that would be super interesting to see. I'm really excited to see what's happening in that space.
Nice. Great. Look, I've heard a lot about that as well. I've previously done a podcast with Zane, who specializes in that space. It's definitely one of the hype areas for 2022. But in terms of today's episode, Najee, that takes us to a close. So for everyone listening, this is the Computer Vision in Production podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Kelly. Today's guest is Naja Van Schmood. Naja is the co-founder at Peregrine.ai. Thank you for being a part on the show, Naja. It was great to have you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Anthony, for the invite, and it was really fun. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Computer Vision in Production podcast with your host, Anthony Kelly. To make sure you get updates on the latest episodes of the show, make sure you subscribe on your preferred podcast listening app or add me on LinkedIn.